Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's L-O-N-E-S-T-A-R Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
Welcome, dear listener, to Fear from the Heartland. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley. Set aside some moments now and take an adventurous ride on a journey into the psyche of some talented writers. They will dig into your being and titillate you. Oh, I love that word. Titillate. While the stories may not all take place in the Heartland, I am delivering them to you from the Heartland. My intention is to strike fear and confusion into the mind, soul, and yes, the heart. This is Fear from the Heartland. Hello, Heartlanders, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 8 of Fear from the Heartland. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley. Hey, Heartlanders, you guys patrons yet? Visit simplyscarypodcast.com and click Patrons in the upper menu to join the club. You'll get ad-free versions of this and all our other podcasts, including hundreds of standalone releases from our audio archives dating back to 2012. It's a great way to show your support, and you get a whole lot for it. Double up, twofer, twice as much. BOGO. Like BOGO the clown killed two people but only got charged with one murder. What I'm trying to say is I have two tales for you good Heartlanders tonight. No theme to speak of, just two great authors with some scary mind-numbing shit thrown your way. I'll let the likes of Xavier Poe Kane and N.M. Brown show you what I mean. Let's get after it. In the wilderness of West Virginia, two ginseng hunters attempt to put aside their checkered past and work together to reach a legendary honey hole, but their journey is riddled with bitterness and tension that no amount of loot can smooth over. When tragedy strikes, each man is given a chance to betray the other. Will a common foe, one that was once only legend, be enough to keep them together and perhaps get them out of Appalachia alive? This story is dedicated to Chief Master Sergeant Mark Smith, U.S. Air Force retired, and is edited by Kayla Randolph. And now for your indulgence, Appalachia by Xavier Poe Kane. Dallas skipped a stone as he sat on the bank of a tributary of the Elk River. His aluminum two-man canoe gently bobbed in the lazy current. His gear already loaded, he waited for his partner. He yawned, stretched his lanky frame, and scratched an itch under his unkempt beard. He wore an old beat-up set of multicams in a way that would have driven his sergeant first-class nuts were he here. Blouse unzipped and hanging like a civilian jacket. Pants unbloused and hanging over broken-in coyote-brown suede leather combat boots and a rattlesnake-skin cowboy hat tilted back on his head. His steel-blue eyes scanned the river and trees on the opposite shore. Before Iraq, he never noticed the various shades of green sported by the aspens, oaks, walnuts, and other leafy trees of West Virginia. Soon the green would change to a blaze of yellows, oranges, and reds. He did not know, or care to know, about the history of tectonic plates thrusting up the Earth's rocky mantle to form the Appalachians, or about how erosion wore the mountains down to almost a plain before geological forces once more propelled rock into the sky. Dallas did not care about the natural processes that took place over the span of hundreds of millions of years to form the forests, mountains, and ridges around him. he skipped another flat stone across the serene tributary. Plop, 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 splash. He smiled as 7 skips was a personal record. His hands searched for another, but stopped as the crunching of truck tires on gravel seized his attention, his head snapping toward the sound. A red late-model Dodge Ram came to a stop next to his newer forest green Ford. Its diesel engine angrily knocked as the driver put the truck in park, the engine sputtering stubbornly to a stop as the driver's door opened. Dallas watched as black combat boots reached for the ground. Faded olive drab pants hung lazily about the driver's feet. Dallas spat out his dip, his eyes narrowing as he appraised his partner for this weekend's harvest. The other man, whose real name was Mark, was short, stocky, and old to Dallas's early 30-something eyes. This was the man that, when Dallas was 5, stepped in when his father abandoned him and his mother. When the older man's hair and beard turned silvery white, he looked like Kenny Rogers. This earned him the nickname Kenny, not only from Dallas, but from Mark's friends and family as well. Kenny reached into the bed of his truck and pulled out an old beat-up leather gun case. Unzipping it, he removed a lever-action rifle and slung the .30-30 over his right shoulder. He grabbed his backpack and made his way over to Dallas.
"What do you know?"
he asked in the Appalachian accent, echoing the region's early Anglo-Scot colonists. After dropping his pack and laying the rifle across it, he extended his hand to Dallas. Less than pleased, Dallas did not move. His cold eyes studied his temporary partner. Kenny withdrew his offered hand. Dallas pushed himself to his feet, proud that at 6'1" he stood at least a head taller. He did not wince at the momentary stab of pain as his right knee popped from an old injury. Getting up revealed the bottom half of a holster holding a .44 Magnum revolver his father had given to Kenny. He took off his hat and ran his fingers through brown hair as wild and untamed as his beard. "You're late." His voice was a clear and slow Midwest monotone. He turned and started pulling the canoe closer to shore so the old man could get in and they could begin the journey to the honey hole.
"There."
Kenny in the front of the canoe pointed excitedly at a break in the trees on the left bank.
"Them trees."
Dallas steered the canoe toward the break. The water turned from green to clear as they neared shore. Minnows scattered as the aluminum hull scratched and scraped across mud and river rock. 10 feet away, a 6-foot water moccasin turned its head and considered the interlopers for a moment before languidly slipping into the water and disappearing. Kenny secured the canoe to a tree as Dallas waded to the riverbank. The men pulled the canoe into the woods and hid it in the brush.
"My pop found his honey hole 20 years ago, pulled so much sing out of the ground. Some of them had to be 25 or 30 years old if they were a day,"
Kenny chatted as they made their way along a game trail.
"Last year, prices were about $1,600 a pound for dried. Didn't clean out the honey hole, though. He left some for later. Let the seed spread. Pa respected the land and the root, you know?"
Dallas nodded and started up the path as the wind rustled the branches of the trees surrounding them. "We'd better hurry up and find good land to pitch camp." His eyes scanned the position of the sun through the branches. "It'll be dark soon." The fire crackled and sent sparks flying into the inky blue night sky. Dallas imagined them seeking to join the trillions of stars in the West Virginia sky. He watched as each one winked out in their doomed quest to become something great, something immortal. He loved the peace and silence.
"You know,"
Kenny started, likely feeling the need to fill the silence,
"I read somewhere some archaeologist said the first sign of civilization is a healed bone."
He paused for a response. Not getting one, he carried on.
"See, a broken bone means death for an animal. Even herd or pack animals leave the broken behind for predators. However, a healed bone means a group took the time to nurse and protect the broken rather than leave them to keep a wolf's belly full so it would stop hunting for a day or two."
Dallas neither moved nor spoke.
"Still holding on to that grudge?"
Kenny asked. Dallas looked at him as he leaned back against a tree, his hat lowered over his eyes.
"Come on, I said I saw it. That's why I brung you on this trip, to make amends."
Dallas's chest rhythmically rose and fell with each inhale and exhale. He made no other movement.
Well, ain't you going to say something?
Dallas's chest rose higher than before and paused before he let out his breath. You left me to die. To drown, asshole. Does that mean you're uncivilized? He didn't give his former mentor a chance to answer. One honey hole is only the beginning of repaying that debt. He left his hat down, concealing a piercing and accusing gaze. One honey hole, he huffed. Better be a big one, and then it'd only be the start of fixing what you broke.
Listen, son.
I'm not your son.
You know what I mean.
Kenny studied his partner for a moment.
Look, you're the best digger I ever trained. You're my best friend's son. I love you like you're my own.
Yeah, you did, and I trusted you just like I did him, Dallas shrugged. But I guess that's just what father figures do, abandon their sons.
I told you I had to get help.
Keep telling yourself that. We all know the only reason you've ever been around is for yourself. You got close to me so you could fuck Mom. Kenny's face turned red.
Listen here, you little shit. You moved back home looking for peace after all you saw over there? Some thought you'd just be another drifter. Others mocked you, called you Rambo behind your back, and not in a good way.
He leaned over and angrily poked the fire with a stick.
If you haven't noticed, I'm trying to make it up to you.
We'll see, Dallas said before rolling over and turning his back on Kenny.
You're just going to turn your back on a man who almost killed you?
Dallas rolled back over and lifted the brim of his hat just enough to appraise the old man. He smirked and chortled dismissively before rolling back over.
What's that supposed to mean?
Let's just say I know killers, old man. I see one every time I look in a mirror. If you're too much of a coward to save my life, you ain't going to have it in you to kill me. After a few moments, Dallas was softly snoring. Dallas awoke to the sound of something rummaging through his pack. He slowly opened his eyes as a stench like a junkyard dog sprayed by a skunk assaulted his nostrils. Combat in Afghanistan taught him how horrible humans could smell, but no human could stink like this. It was wild and bestial. The remains of their fire had been snuffed out by a light rain, and the moonlight through the woods canopy afforded little help. He made out the hulking form of what he assumed was a bear, but he just closed his eyes. This was not the first time he had feared for his life in the dark. He heard Kenny stirring awake. Dallas once more opened his eyes. The shadow froze, the indistinct head shape turning towards Dallas's partner.
Dallas, that you, buddy?
Kenny asked. The shadow moaned. It was a harsh, grating, and long-drawn utterance that sounded peculiarly sinister. Then it crashed through the trees, fleeing the campsite. Its stench lingered as Dallas began to move.
What in the actual fuck was that? Did you see it?
Kenny asked. I didn't see nothing, Dallas said as he looked around. Stinky bastard. Probably some bear. Smells like it fell into a lagoon. Damn big black bear. Kenny shrugged.
Who knows? Sometimes things look bigger in the dark.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
The rest of the night passed without sleep for the two men. They heard little aside from the occasional rustle in the woods or snap of a twig, neither one of which helped calm the feeling of being watched as the sinister odor faded but refused to disappear. With the aid of morning's light, they looked for tracks in the soft mud. What they found had been deformed by more rain that spat throughout the night.
That bear walked on two legs, Kenny exclaimed. They almost look human, too.
Dallas could only chuckle.
It wasn't Bigfoot, you old coot.
Kenny shrugged as he finished repacking his backpack. Dallas tried to ignore that it actually didn't look like it had been a bear. The trip to the honey hole was long on tired legs. The sound of movement just beyond sight as they made their way to Kenny's secret crop did little to ease their jangled nerves. nor did it help that they were surrounded on two sides by mountains. Eventually, Kenny led them up the mountain just above some exposed rock. When they found the honey hole, it was better than Kenny had said. The bumper crop of old-growth ginseng lifted their spirits and energized them. Not only did the pair forget about the sensation of being stalked, but they even went nose-blind to the foul stench.
"You gonna do any more harvesting this year?"
Kenny asked as they began planting seeds from the mature plants they had collected.
"I get this sold and add it to what I've already banked, and I got my year."
"Maybe," Dallas replied, having warmed again to his mentor. "But no offense, I'll be doing it alone."
"Still seeing Nikki?"
"No," Dallas shook his head. "She couldn't take my night terrors anymore. She left last week." He took a deep breath. "Can we just focus on planting?" The seeds would take decades to yield a day like today. While there was no guarantee they would reap the benefits of their labors, another ginseng hunter would. The sun began setting and they decided to camp in a glade not far from the honey hole. It was bordered on one side by a stream. On the other, the mountain sloped upward. The unease surrounding the events of the night before began to set in. Both were exhausted, and after a meager meal, they decided to take turns staying awake. Dallas took the first watch. Shortly after Kenny started softly snoring, a low rustle on the slope grabbed Dallas's attention. A black mass was moving down the opposite slope. Branches crackled as the demon moved through the trees and brush. It stayed in the shadows, not venturing into the bubble of light given off by the campfire. Dallas considered taking a shot, but the beast seemed to know how to move and take cover in ways that prevented a clear shot. He counted a half dozen times that the creature seemed to sit and utter a peculiarly sinister-sounding grunt. A light breeze carried the foul stench, similar to a skunk. Dallas shined his flashlight across a thicket. He could make out nothing but shadow and leaves until the beam moved across the animal's eyes. The eyeshine was blood red and elicited a grating harsh moan drawn out for as long as Dallas held the light. His heart stopped and his breath caught in his throat. He had not felt fear like this since the first time his unit was attacked a lifetime ago. His heart began beating again and his breath returned as he jerked the light away. He gained control of himself and shined his light back where the monster had been seconds earlier. Nothing stared back at him. Next to him, Kenny began to stir.
"See something, Dallas?"
"The bear came back. Was just in that thicket. I saw his eye shine. It was red as blood." Kenny was silent for a long moment.
"Strange. Bear's eyes shine orange. Maybe it was something else."
Yeah, old man." Dallas peered into the darkness. "It's gone now and I'm tired. It's your watch." No longer interested in debating, he found his bedroll and pretended to be asleep as Kenny tried to carry on a conversation. The older man chattered on about the legends of Bigfoot for a few minutes more before giving up, and Dallas was able to finally drift asleep. Dallas awoke to the scent and sizzle of bacon frying and the sound of eggs being scrambled.
"Morning,"
Kenny curtly replied, setting the bowl of eggs aside and taking the bacon off the cast iron pan he carried with him.
"Breakfast is almost done."
"Smells good." Dallas watched as Kenny served breakfast and handed a plate to him before sitting and beginning to eat in silence. Dallas cleared his throat. "What, no stories about Bigfoot?"
"You know, Dallas, at some point a man's got to decide. Does he accept the apology of someone who did him wrong? Or does he just move on and part ways?"
Kenny sat his plate down.
"Likewise, a man who's made a mistake and tried to atone for it has to decide at what point he's done enough to satisfy his conscience and walk away from a friend who won't accept his apology. I made a mistake. I've tried to make up for it. Now you can either forgive me or not. There's nothing else I can do."
Dallas simmered with rage. "Seriously? You left me for dead and think a simple apology and showing me a honey hole makes up for it?" He shook his head. "We have a code in the military to never leave a man behind. I thought you held true to that. I was wrong, and it nearly cost me my life. I think you mean what you say when you're trying, but I'm not ready to trust you yet."
"Holding on to that kind of negativity will eat at a man,"
Kenny said as he shoveled the rest of his breakfast into his face.
Besides, I didn't leave you when my piece of shit best friend left his wife and you behind.
The two men finished their breakfast in silence. Their path back to the canoe was not easily traced after the rain. After reorienting themselves, they were led along a crevice about 8 feet deep. Both sides were of smooth rock about 30 feet high, but only one side had a ledge wide enough for one person, unladen with pack or rifle, to carefully make their way to the other side. Dallas went first, sedimentary rock periodically crumbling and tumbling into the shallow void. He trailed a rope tied on one end to their packs and rifles. He would drag them over when he was safely across. Then it was Kenny's turn. With his eyes closed and his back pressed against the stone wall, he began sidestepping the narrow pathway. Halfway across, the ledge under his left foot crumbled, causing him to lose his balance. He stumbled and slid into the gorge.
"Dallas!"
he yelled, his fingers scrambling for purchase on the smooth rock.
"Oh, fuck!"
he cried as he landed, twisting his knee the wrong way.
"Dallas, get me out of here!"
Dallas stepped to the edge of the crevice and peered down at the old man. He almost decided to abandon the packs and use the rope to pull his once friend to safety. Something inside the dark recesses of his heart made him reconsider. "Save yourself. This haul will let me end the season early." With those words, he disappeared from Kenny's sight. After retrieving their packs and rifles, Dallas only got about 50 yards away before sitting down. While the view of the Appalachians was amazing, Kenny's cries for help ruined it. It was times like these that made him wish he smoked or had taken his buddy's advice and tried medicinal weed, anything to take the edge off. He was waiting for Kenny to stop screaming at him. Dallas didn't leave a man behind. It wasn't in the creed. But teaching someone a lesson about why is different. Once Kenny resigned himself to his fate and got silent, just like Dallas had when he almost drowned, he had deserved to be rescued. He closed his eyes for a moment and then smelled the now familiar stink of the creature that had been stalking them. He opened his eyes and scanned in front of him, nothing but a mountain view. He turned his head and looked behind a tree just as a rock the size of a basketball flew by him, landing with a dull wet thud 4 feet away. He flinched and then turned to look back again. He saw a tall dark blur darting into the mountain underbrush. Dallas didn't hesitate. He hurled himself from the ground and reached for his rifle. A stone the size of a softball splintered a branch to his left. His flight instinct kicked in and he left it, turning on his heel and taking off in a sprint. The demon howled in rage behind him. A large stone hit the ground near his feet, followed by the sound of something giant smashing through the forest. He heard the beast catching up with him. The wind changed, overwhelming Dallas's nostrils with the stench. He saw a small cave formed by a landslide and he slid in, squeezing himself into the space and trying not to make a sound. He heard the beast crash through the underbrush as it ran past his hiding spot. Dallas refused to breathe and remained still, waiting for the creature to leave the area. His eyes scanned the entrance and he was about to move when the creature's face appeared. The demon's face was a mixture of ape and man covered in dull black hair. White froth foamed at its mouth. It let out a crazed screech that reverberated in the small space. Its breath reeked of death. Its hairy hands, sporting black fingernails, reached for Dallas. Dallas cursed himself for leaving his rifle where he dropped it. In desperation, he looked and felt around the cave for something to use as a weapon. He found a rock and began striking the creature's hand. After the third or fourth hit, Dallas heard the satisfying sound of bone breaking. The beast howled in pain and withdrew his arm. It screamed into the cave and then disappeared from the mouth, leaving Dallas alone. Dallas awoke with a start. A gentle breeze brought cool early evening air to him. Dirt and dried drool clung to his cheek. Other than a few bug bites, he was unharmed. Sniffing the air like a trapped animal, he could not smell the demon scent. Slowly, he clawed his way from the safety of the small cave. Standing upright to stretch, his back cracked loudly in the quiet. It took him a moment to sense that it was a little too quiet. Other than the breeze rustling leaf and limb, there was no noise. His heart began to race as he took off toward their abandoned packs and his gun. He would return for Kenny, and they would escape together. Then they could get a hunting party together to track down the beast. they would be rich. The shattering of his fibula and tibia brought Dallas back to reality, a jagged rock the size of a soccer ball smashing into his leg. Dropping to the ground, he began screaming. He knew this was the end. He was a broken animal with a predator nearby. The demon loomed over him, reaching down and grabbing Dallas's arms to lift him into the air. The creature howled at him, foamy spittle splattering his face. He felt his arms being pulled from their sockets, his body going numb as his mind tried to protect him from the pain. Images flashed before his eyes. His favorite teddy bear as a child, his first crush in second grade, Kenny teaching him to drive, his girlfriend breaking up with him before prom, shitting his pants the first time a Taliban fighter took a shot at him. The memories faded and Dallas felt as if he were falling. He felt a warm liquid covering his face as he crossed the void between life and death. Intense pain shot from his leg as he felt his body hit something. He forced his eyes open. He couldn't help but think how much the afterlife looked like Earth.
"Dallas?"
He heard a familiar voice and looked up, seeing Kenny running toward him. He tried to speak, to apologize for leaving Kenny behind to die.
"Don't speak, son," Kenny said.
Even through the pain, Dallas was amazed that Kenny had managed to find his gun, let alone get out of that crevice. The older man took his shirt off, revealing a faded volcano tattoo on his bicep. Dallas watched as Kenny pulled a knife and began cutting his shirt into strips, not understanding why the old man would do that to his own shirt. Dallas rolled his head to the other side and saw the demon. Its glassy eyes stared back at him with enlarged pupils before turning a gray-blue color. Suddenly, bloody viscera spilled from the chamber of its now exploded skull as Dallas's vision began to darken. Visions of being drugged through the hilly woods of the Appalachians interrupted Dallas's stupor. He was aware only vaguely of sunlight filtering through the leaves and branches of the trees. Trying to look around but not being able to move his head, passing out again, waking up to Kenny giving him a sip from his canteen. Through the haze of these semi-lucid moments, Dallas heard Kenny arguing with himself.
"If he can't forgive, then fuck him. Too much of his father in him."
The pain and anger in Kenny's voice stung as much as his words.
"She was too good for the deadbeat. Biggest problem in this world is no one helps each other."
By the time Dallas felt himself swaying in the river waters, it was dark. The sound of a paddle struggling to move upstream blended with the chorus of the night.
"This is huge, a real-life squatch, and I have proof."
Dallas could only moan softly as Kenny continued his diatribe.
"There wouldn't have been any question in your part of the spoils before, son, but now, I just don't know."
Red and blue lights roused Dallas as he was lifted and placed onto a stretcher.
"Kenny," he said, briefly regaining the ability to turn his head before a paramedic placed a cervical collar around his neck.
In the distance, his mentor was talking with a deputy.
"Kenny," he reached for the old man.
"Sir," the paramedic said as she placed a hand on his chest, "you need to be still."
Her voice caught Kenny's attention, who limped over.
"Hey, son,"
he said, eyes boring into Dallas's soul.
"I'm sorry I left you. I was just trying to prove a point."
A tear slid down his cheek.
"I'm sorry for the shit I said about you and Mom, about holding on to that grudge for so long."
"It's okay," Kenny smiled and held up the bag of ginseng. "And once I lead a team back to the carcass, we're gonna be rich. Imagine it, real proof of Sasquatch."
You're still gonna cut me in?"
Dallas blurted out, remembering what he had heard.
After everything?"
Kenny patted him gently on the shoulder.
"Not going to lie, it's tempting, real tempting. But all I ever wanted was your forgiveness."
He winked.
"Besides, the damn skeptics are gonna try to tear the story apart. We gotta hang together or our reputations will hang separately."
Dallas relaxed into the stretcher, relieved that all debts were square. As he closed his eyes, a mournful howl echoed through the mountains. He must have imagined it.
Ready to level up your day? Then join me and my friends at LoneStarCasino.com. That's LoneStar Casino, where you can experience the thrill of Las Vegas, no matter where you are. LoneStarCasino.com is an absolutely free-to-play social casino with thousands of games, daily bonuses, free spins, and jackpots that pop like fireworks. Hit pause on life and hit play on LoneStarCasino.com.
Lone Star Casino is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit LoneStarCasino.com for more details.
Sign up today for an incredible welcome bonus. Play bold. Win big.
I hope you enjoyed tonight's story, Appalachia, by Xavier Poe Kane. Not yet a best-selling author, Xavier Poe Kane is a former door gunner on the International Space Station. When not making the galaxy safe for democracy, he writes whatever weirdness comes to mind. He currently lives in the woods with his wife Morticia in a state of mutual weirdness with their dogs Chuck Norris and the three-legged Jabba the Hutt. Thanks to the GI Bill, he has an MFA in popular fiction writing and publishing from Emerson College. He is currently working on his second publication, a collection of short stories tentatively titled Broken Hearts and Other Horrors. You can hook up with Xavier and check out what consumes him at his website, www.xavierkane.com. That's XAVIERKANE.com. You can also go to Amazon.com and search for Xavier Poe Kane, and that will take you to his author page. Or Twitter at XavierKane9, and on Facebook, Xavier Kane. It's said that if someone could take the pain away from the one they love, they would do so in a heartbeat. But what if you have the agonizing experience of living your loved one's pain when you're too far away to help? When our main character finally reunites with his injured love, her injuries are the last of his worries. And now for your indulgence, Body Changes by N.M. Brown. My wife, Vicky, means more to me than my own life. I've consulted doctors after hours, anonymous clinical helplines, even a suicide hotline for Christ's sake. The only course of action that I have left is to release her into professional medical care. As weak as it makes me sound, I just know that once I do that, I'll never see my wife again. I'm overly long-winded, and even more so when I'm upset about something, so bear with me. The day started like many others, with the rough sound of wood grinding against wood drilling through my subconscious like a boring bit, rudely rousing me from sleep.
All right, honey,
I mumbled to Vicky, who I knew was pretending to be asleep so I'd get the baby.
Devin's awake now.
I opened my eyes and stared at Devin, who had managed to scoot his crib across the entire floor to my bedside.
Stay here and watch him so I can pee.
If you don't let me pee by choice, it will happen on its own anyway, causing Mommy to be in a very, very bad mood today.
Vicky grumbled through sleep-swollen lips as she threw the covers off of herself and rose to her feet. She kissed the top of my head and handed me some dehydrated banana slices to keep Devin busy as she rushed to the master bathroom. Our puppy, Jet, was clawing at the outside of the second bathroom door, desperate to drain her own bladder. "Hang on, pup," I yelled out, letting her know I was aware that she's awake and had to go outside. Devin was out of his crib completely by now. I could hear his little feet padding around the kitchen. My temples pounded as I heard giggles scattered throughout the rooms around me. Looking back now, I honestly didn't know why I was surprised. It's been like this almost every morning since my baby learned how to walk. Seconds after Vicky stepped out of the bathroom, her face scrunched up in anger and disgust. "What happened?" I asked, looking down at her feet. Her middle toes were surrounded by a smeary wet blob on our bedroom carpet.
Oh my God, it's so squishy. The viscosity of it alone makes me want to puke. Ugh,
she lamented. Surveying the scene, I discovered she had stepped in two of many pieces of discarded banana slices.
After placing Devon behind the baby gate in the living room, Vicky limped to the laundry hallway in search of a dirty towel to clean her foot with. I stifled laughter through my palm as I took care of my own bathroom needs. I freeze midstream as I hear a dreaded sound of something scattering across the living room floor. To my dismay, in the moments it had taken my wife to cross the house, Devon had found the can of Pringles I had neglected to put away the night before. By the time I entered the living room, Vicky's hands were resting atop her head in defeat as both puppy and toddler voraciously smashed and ate at the tiny pieces of chips. Great. Clumsily vaulting over the baby gate, Vicky grabbed the broom and started sweeping up the mess. I can get that, babe, I commented, attempting to grab the broom from her. Jet and Devon both swatted at the broom conspiratorially, one more feat of their eternal quest to thwart the ever-ongoing cleaning process.
No, that's okay.
She smiled, taking a breath of victory as the last of the contained pile was up off the floor and out of their reach in the dustpan.
You have to finish packing,
she lightly scolded. Just as one issue was dealt with, another arose. Our eldest son, Charlie, called out from his bedroom that he needed help logging into his school conference on his computer. Relax, I say to Vicky as I kiss her cheek. I'll take care of it. I barely have anything left to pack anyway. I'm sorry they're so crazy today, I murmur through an awkward smile as I gesture to the two smallest members of our family. Charlie's almost fully situated with his laptop when I hear a shrill cry come from the kitchen area. I bounded out of his room to see her feet twist around each other as she futilely tried to attain balance. I started running for her, knowing full well I wouldn't reach her in time. The dustpan flies from her hand as she hits the floor with a hard thwack. Fucking gate, I exclaimed. Jesus Christ, are you all right? As my wife lays there waiting for the pain to kick in, our dog Jet tentatively makes her way through the broken section of the fence. The slightest smile formed at the corners of Vicky's lips as if she was allowing herself the tiniest bit of comfort in the situation at Jet's presence. She was probably assuming the dog was coming over to check on her.
Hey, girl.
She mumbles. Jet sniffs her face for a moment in response before proceeding to climb over to devour the Pringle bits scattered on the floor. Great. The first thing I did after making sure that she was okay was chuck the baby gate out into the yard as far as I could throw it. I continued to check on her intermittently, but shock and adrenaline seemed to carry her through the rest of the day with little to no pain. She said her body felt stiff, sure, but that was about the extent of it. What we woke up to the next morning was a whole different story. Fucking hell, I exclaimed. The covers were pulled from our feet as I swung my legs over the bed to get my bearings for the morning. Vicky's left foot was swollen and covered by a deep crimson bruise. Her pinky toe was slightly misshapen and set in a different direction than before. She began wincing audibly before my fingers even came in contact with the toe beside it. The end was scuffed and scabbed over, but so far it looked like the pinky toe was the only one broken. I was beyond horrified when the toenails separated at only the slightest touch. I'd imagine it hurt like a son of a bitch. A gelatinous film of where old blood melded with new was visible from underneath the nail. It wiggled against my fingertip, and I just knew the main things holding it in place were her green nail polish and a sliver of skin with nerves attached. Mind you, I can't handle that shit. The scenes in the scary movies where someone's nail comes off as they grasp the wall for safety as they're abducted? Can't even do it. Not to mention the pain. I'm sure it already hurts like hell as it was. It wasn't likely that yanking the rest of it out would feel any better. Are you sure I should go? I asked worriedly. I don't feel right leaving you here injured with two kids. I'll be in the woods a lot and service is shitty out there. Can you even walk? We only had a limited window of time before the baby woke up and I had to leave. So with gritted teeth, she swung both legs over the edge of the bed, placed both feet on the floor, and limped to the bathroom.
Yeah, I think I'll be okay.
She called out in the friendliest voice she could manage. A random car horn blared outside, followed very shortly by Devon's shrill cries.
God damn it,
she exclaimed.
I love you. I'll miss you. Call me when you can, okay?
She blurts dismissively before planting a passionate kiss on my lips. She means well. Just gets stressed easily. I'm sure the business trip I was about to leave for didn't help either. But I was up against another guy, Mark, for a promotion. He wasn't able to make it due to family obligations. The joy on my boss's face as I assured him I'd be there cemented my lingering suspicions. If I did go, I knew I'd look a hell of a lot better for the job than Mark would. It's just the way things were. I needed a leg up. I deserved that position. Vicky understood and was grateful for the opportunity for a higher paycheck. The drive was shorter than expected. I won't bore you with the details. After all, that's not why we're here. We're here because of the text messages and voicemails I received throughout the weekend. As was mentioned previously, leaving her over 100 miles away with an injury was a little more disconcerting due to the fact that reception was rumored to be a joke where I was. That's why that location was picked. Minimal distractions. I had a 2-mile window of service on the way to the terminal where I was able to check my messages. They began flooding my phone in a symphony of pings. Voicemail, 9:58 a.m.
Hey honey, miss you. Your mom came to pick up the kids, thank God. So I ran some warm water in the tub, poured in some Epsom salt and bubble bath, and stepped right in. I was hoping that swishing my foot around enough would help the damaged nail fall off on its own. The water took on the slightest tinge of pink after I placed my foot under the faucet, and pain like seared through my leg like a lightning bolt. Ugh, it was awful. Sadly, the only thing washing my feet accomplished was to piss me off. Also, did you know that warm water increases bleeding? Not so helpful tidbit after the fact, Chris. After folding a paper towel into fourths and grabbing my peroxide, I was ready to get it over with. I remember wishing my dad was there. You remember the deal, right? You'd have a loose tooth, and your dad would tie a string around it, attach the other end to a cabinet or doorknob or something, and then slam it. He's told you about it at least 100 times. It's much more anticlimactic than it sounds, but yeah, I really wish the same rules of physics could be applied to a fucking nail. Anyway, I bit down on a washcloth like I'd seen people do in old war movies, perched my still dampened foot on the ledge of the sink, and grabbed hold of the nail. The paper towel was too slick against the fresh flow of blood to get a decent grip. Or maybe that's just the excuse I gave myself to avoid intensifying the pain. I'm gonna leave it be for a while and try again later. I wish you were here.
11:17 a.m.
My foot slipped off the lip of the damn vanity. I hit the knob to the door on the way down. Swirls of red, black, and white consumed my vision as I swore into the cloth in my mouth. The cotton fibers against my tongue threatened to gag me as I bit down after the last K sound of a freshly uttered fuck.
12:02 p.m.
I found a small, bloodied nub of nail lying dejectedly on the floor. One way or another, I got the fucker. Right, babe?
5:38 p.m.
Weird. So, where there was once blood, mar, and damaged tissue, now sits a perfect nail. Here, I'll send you a video.
Moments later, a 4-second-long video clip appeared in my inbox. 4 lime green painted toes wiggled effortlessly, with a perfect but unpainted one dancing along with them. 5:42 p.m.
Okay, Chris, there are 2 options here. 1, the replacement nail grew crazy fast all day, which was more like 6 or so hours in the damaged one's place. 2, I've gained access to unexplainable regenerative powers.
Admittedly, I just looked at my screen dumbstruck. What the hell could I say to something like that? My eyes scanned her words repeatedly, desperate for any signs of levity or humor. There were none. She was dead serious. I'm writing this today because, as terrible and ludicrous as it may seem, my wife believed she had in fact been granted with miracle regeneration. Chop it off and it will grow back like new, assuming she survives the initial pain and bleeding. Sunday, 8:32 a.m.
So, don't freak out, but I've been running some tests. I started small at first with the tip of my thumb, but it escalated. And everyone has little things that they don't like about themselves. Hey, what about my chicken pox scars?
Back when my wife was a child in the early 90s, there were no chicken pox vaccines. You got it, stayed in bed, and were told not to scratch till you got over it. Vicky was no exception, only her scars from having them were more visible than most. She had the cutest little bangs and had gotten a fresh round of hives just where the ends meet her forehead and eyebrows. The more my mother-in-law got onto her for scratching, the harder she would do it. This resulted in two pockmarked scars buried directly in the middle of Vicky's forehead, one directly above the other, in between her eyes in a straight line. The reason I made you sit through that anecdote is because that's where she said she cut next. Another voicemail from Vicky said that she was convinced if she cut the smallest sliver of flesh from her forehead, the scars would be out of her life forever. After 33 years of painstakingly staring at them in the mirror, she said it would be a dream come true. A crippling wave of panic and self-doubt must have overwhelmed her the moment she finished filleting the top part of her face, because a flurry of messages followed in rapid-fire succession. Sunday, 9:49 a.m.
Christ, Chris, what if it doesn't grow back? I mean, did I really let slight discomfort make me replace two small marks with a gaping square? I mean, how in the hell would I explain the new scar? I think I'm gonna take something. Okay, more than one thing. For anxiety, lie down and anxiously await tomorrow. My forehead is on fire. It seems like it will be almost impossible to fall asleep, but somehow I'll manage.
Sunday, 1:18 p.m.
I woke up with no pain. It must have worked. Peeling the blood-crusted gauze away and washing my skin revealed a smooth patch of peach flesh underneath. The marks are gone, along with any traces of my self-surgery. I feel incredible.
Sunday, 2:45 p.m.
I'm gonna try my lips next. You have no idea how badly I've wanted fuller lips. Sadly, it doesn't work that way, though.
Sunday, 3:14 p.m.
It gives you exactly what you should have had before, no enlargements. I mean, in the end, I was just so happy to have them back that I didn't care what size they were. And the stakes feel higher and higher each time I try something new, but I just can't stop.
I'm writing to you all because my plane leaves in less than half an hour and she says I'm ready to get serious. No more selfish cosmetic crap. For whatever reason, as much as I still doubt it, it appears my wife has been given a gift and she's ready to truly test its limits. A few years back, she started suffering from terrible back problems. For a while, I thought something went wrong with her epidural when Devon was born. A visit to a surgeon revealed that to be untrue. There's been a mass slowly forming on the upper middle part of my wife's back. I remember the cold, confusing weeks that followed as she pushed me away to protect me from her damaged fate. As much as it sounds necessary, my insurance wouldn't cover surgery until her condition ceases mobility completely, deeming it a life-saving procedure. By then, there would be a good chance that too much damage would have already been done. My Uber had dropped me off at the house. Though I had only been gone for 3 days, the entire aura of our home seemed different, darker. As much as I felt the overwhelming need to rush through the front door to check on her, a part of me was terrified at what I might find. We didn't have much time to figure this out before Mom brought the kids back home. I almost wanted to call her and tell her not to even bring them. But then I would have to explain why and what was going on. These were questions I wasn't quite prepared to answer. The smooth but soul-crushing sound of heartache rang through the house. Vicky was playing one of her mother's old Tammy Wynette albums. Our home was clean for the most part. I'd expected blood and discarded body parts to be strewn about the apartment. My wife's humming grew louder along with my heartbeat as she turned the corner. She was beautiful. I was so relieved to come home to the woman I married that I instantly picked her up and twirled her around. We kissed several times before setting her back down again. I held her tight in my arms, chuckling with joy of relief. Then I looked in the living room mirror. Her face separated from my shoulder, leaving strings of pus and blood in its wake. My wife's forehead was slick with infection. Sinew and muscle tissue gleamed against the living room light. I could see every bit of visceral damage done to my wife's face. Shoving her away, I looked to my shoulder and there was nothing. where the mirror showed a disgusting stain of fluids, was crisp cotton to my naked eye. I've moved most of the mirrors covering the ones too heavy for travel. Sheets adorn our windows, keeping our children from their normal sunlit play. I play with them outside a lot, and it doesn't seem to be a problem as long as they don't catch her reflection in the car windows. I have no idea if I'm losing it or if there really is something fundamentally wrong with her. She is begging me to help with her back, to free her from a life of pain and torment. I wonder if this has ever happened to anyone else. After all, YouTube and the internet can teach someone to do just about anything. I'm scared that if I don't agree to this, she's ready to do this herself before most of her spine is affected. What should I do? Hope you enjoyed tonight's story, Body Changes, by N.M. Brown. N.M. Brown is a Florida native, wife and mother of three, who reads about chasing away monsters to her kids before bed, then writing them down to get them out of her head. She is also the chief operations manager for our very own Chilling Tales for Dark Nights network. Her written work appears in over 50 horror anthologies, all of which are available on Amazon.com. If you'd like to hear more stories by N.M. Brown, you can search for her by name on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights archives. It was my pleasure to have the awesome, talented Melissa Medina lend her voice to tonight's performance. Fun fact, it's her birthday tomorrow as well. Happy birthday, Melissa. As for voice actress Melissa Medina, more of her work can be found on the official Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel, as well as her website, HearMelissa.com. That's HearMelissa.com. Be sure to check her out when you can. I assure you, you won't be disappointed. If you enjoyed tonight's story, hosted by yours truly, Paul J. McSorley, you can search my name on Chilling Tales for Dark Nights on YouTube for additional previous stories. If you'd like to hear more lengthy tales, be sure to take a look at my audiobooks. Available now on Audible.com or just visit paulsbooks.net. That's PAULSBOOKS.net. You can also find me personally on Facebook and Twitter. And with that, listeners, our weekly journey into the psyche has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us for tonight's episode and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And while you're at it, please remember to stop by our Apple Podcast page or wherever else you listen to your favorite podcasts and subscribe. The charts are based on subscriptions, not listens. So if you haven't subscribed yet, I'd really appreciate it. I'm your host for Fear from the Heartland, Paul J. McSorley. I've enjoyed the titillation tonight. Ooh, there's that word again. Thank you for joining me. Hope to see you again next week at Fear from the Heartland.
You know what? It sucks to be bored. But when I get on my phone and play real casino games on SpinQuest.com, the time flies by. That 2-hour wait at the DMV seems like 10 minutes. Play your favorite slots, live blackjack, live craps, with a live dealer. New players, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10. Play SpinQuest.com and you'll never be bored again.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.